Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Page Weekly Spotlight. My name is John Mayo, and I'll be your host.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting three comics that came out in shops last week, but that John and I got from DCBS this week. One from DC, one from Marvel, and one from some other publisher. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
The comics we'll be talking about in this episode originally came out on May 14th, 2008, and this was a little bit bigger week than average, although not by much for me. I got 40 comics, one trade, and some toys.
What toys?
What toys do you think? I got the DC Direct New Teen Titans action figure set.
I only got one of those. I got the Terra.
I got the Terra, the Jericho, the Deathstroke, and the Robin. Couldn't turn those down. I'm a huge Teen Titans fan. So
upon reflection, I might pick up the Robin because I realize I don't really have that Robin. I have a Robin, but he's the young Dick Grayson from the original Teen Titans, not the older Dick Grayson.
Yeah. And the Jericho one turned out pretty well, too. I think they all were pretty good.
Or the Adam Murdo action figure, as he's also known.
That's right. I sent him a photo that I took at San Diego last year, a close-up of the head of it, so you could use that for an icon for the forums if you wanted to. So
I got 37 comics. You beat me this week. I got one graphic novel, Life Sucks, from First Second. It's about a vampire who works in a convenience store. It's actually pretty good. I read it yesterday. The premise of it is that, you know, not all vampires are really great, and this guy gets turned into a vampire by this old world vampire who has him work in the night shift at his convenience store. You know, it's like, vampires have to get money from somewhere, and this one runs a string of convenience stores, so he'll turn some guy into a vampire and, you know, force him to work the night shift at the thing. Plus, there's a benefit. If you get shot by a robber, you don't die because you're a vampire.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. And I got the aforementioned Terra action figure, and I got two of the Marvel lead figures, Black Bolt and the Dread Dormammu.
Cool. See, the trade I got was the Essential Official Handbook of the Marvel Universe Master Edition Volume 2.
And that's color, right?
No, that hardcover? Is not. That's an essential. So it's
essential, yeah. Aren't they doing a hardcover of that?
They're doing a hardcover of the A to Z, but this is a reprint of the old stuff. And I've got a spare set of the old stuff. At some point, I may do the library binding or whatever company that was and get those bound because I saw the Who's Who you had last year and stuff, and that's just nice.
Yeah. The Who's Who stuff is – I like it in color because color is such an essential part of, you know, the costuming and that kind of stuff that you get out of the – Who's Who entries.
Yeah, yeah. But what's nice about the Master Edition of the Official Handbook of the Marvel Universe is that's where they had the front, side, and back shots of the characters. So it was really good costume reference. Now, granted, color would be much, much better than black and white or grayscale, actually. But it's better than some of the things they've done in other both Marvel Universes and Who's Who, where you get a picture of the character, but you don't really get a good costume reference.
Right, because if it's an action shot and it's from the side or whatever, you don't necessarily get the good costume reference. I agree with you on that, and that's why I'd like to see that in color. I mean, I don't disagree that it's a great thing to have collected, but I'd like to see the color in it.
Yeah, I agree. That's something that they really ought to do in hardcover color format and do a nice production of. Well, shall we dive into our DC book for the week?
Sure. Green Lantern Corps, number 24. To the Planet of the Black Mercy.
What did you think of this one?
I liked it. It wasn't – I didn't think it was the greatest issue I'd ever read. I thought there were some really interesting concepts in it, and I like the way that the Black Mercy's been kind of re-engineered a little bit to meet the purpose of the Sinestro Corps a little bit, which actually makes the Black Mercy a little more of a nasty bit of business, since it's not necessarily giving people, I don't know, if a spoiler alert for anyone who doesn't want to get it, I'm just going to say it. But, you know, it's like now, instead of giving somebody their heart's desire, it's getting a hold of them and giving them you know, really horrible fear dreams, which is pretty nasty. So, you know, you get into it and you're locked into this set of dreams of absolute fear, which goes with the Sinestro Corps thing, but it's not a very pleasant experience. At least before, you were kind of in the coma, but you were in like a really nice world, a nice place the whole time you were in it.
Yeah.
Now it's just thoroughly nasty.
I thought it was an okay issue. I was a little, I don't know, displeased, particularly by the recap of the Black Mercy Mongol history. Because while they make reference for the Man Who Has Everything story from the Superman annual way back, they never really tell you at that point what the Black Mercy does. So if somebody's not familiar with the fact that it puts you in, you know, what you would consider a perfect world or whatever, the fact that it's been re-engineered here is going to be lost on them.
Yeah, fair enough point. And that's one of the underlying issues that I had. You know, the story itself, given that I'm following the whole Green Lantern Corps storyline that's going on, it was nice. It moved things along, but it wasn't a self-contained story. But then again, well, you can take this two ways. I mean, it's part three of the Ring Quest story. But to your point about not giving a good background of the Black Mercy, it's not like you got that background in parts one and two either. So even if you were to get this in trade, that particular shortcoming of the story would still be present.
Yeah, and
so there's background you need to have to fully enjoy it. But that being said, you know, for someone who does have the background in the DC lore, I thought it was a very cool story. And not every story can have full reference back to every other point. So
true. It just seemed like that was a relevant point to this story.
True.
And overall, it was not a bad issue. If you're liking the Green Lantern stuff, certainly this is one worth getting. Since it's part three of a ongoing story, I don't know that it's really a good jumping on point, but I do give them credit for trying to give the backstory for both Mongol and the Black Mercy and getting readers up to speed versus just assuming they know everything. It would have been nice if on those flashback pages they had a couple of things of, hey, see this issue for that, see this issue for that, but that's gone out of fashion years ago, so I didn't really expect that.
That's a really good point, though, and that I do miss in comics, which we saw, you know, when we're going to do the next back issue spotlight we do on Nick Fury. Those stories are all littered with cross-references to other books, and I used to always like that, and in fact, it makes you want to maybe go out and get some other book to learn more. And here, you don't have that option because they just don't mention it. And that's something I really do miss in comics, because on these Black Mercy pages, they would have just had a footnote for more. You know, you can see this trade. They could point you to the, you know, Alan Moore stories. They could point you to the specific issues of Superman that had happened in, you know, whatever. It would be just nice because then people could, if they wanted to, say, oh, that seems really cool. That Superman got hit with this thing. Let me go seek out this story.
Yeah, I'm surprised they stopped doing that. I mean, I get the whole, you know, the whole footnotes thing make it seem sort of academic or what have you, but for a kind of cross-marketing tool and just for letting readers say, oh, wow, that does sound cool, let me go get it. It's unfortunate they got rid of those. I miss those. There are a few places where they're starting to pop up again, but you know, I read so much that sometimes it would be nice that, like on the previous page to that Black Mercy recap, Kyle saying that Hal and Green Arrow had a run-in with the Black Mercies a while back. And it's like, when the hell did that happen? Now, when they showed the thing a few pages later, it's like, oh yeah, now I remember, because they show a clip from it or whatever. But if they had simply, you know, see Green Lantern, you know, whatever, whatever, it's like that would either refresh my memory or I could go back and reread that.
Right. That was only last year. It was like Green Lantern number 8 or something.
Yeah.
And that's a really good point, because I have the issue too. I don't exactly remember what issue it was. I think it was 8, but I'm not, you know, again, I'm not like Adam Murdo or something where I like have the perfect recall or something like that. So it would be nice, because if it said, oh, see Green Lantern number 8, I could go, theoretically, I could pull Green Lantern 8 out of the box and I could just give that a quick glance if I was of a mind to. It makes it easy by having those references.
Yeah. Because, I mean, for me, and I'm sure it's about the same for you, that's like 1600 comics ago, just because we read 30 or 40 every week. I think it's easier for the people who read fewer comics, although certainly I don't count Adam Murdo in that category. He's just got a steel trap of a mind. Once things get in there, they stay retained. But, you know, I find it hard to remember all the ins and outs of all the continuity on all the different titles I'm reading. So when they do recaps, I appreciate that. And even though this is a third part of a story, by and large, it did a very good job of staying accessible. And I'm looking forward to where they're going on the Green Lantern stuff, both with the Sinestro Corps and the various other cores that are going to start popping up soon, presumably. So
what was your general feeling about the issue?
I'm going to go with kind of neutral, leaning towards positive. I didn't have any major negatives against it, although I swear Patrick Gleason used to be a better artist. Because I think, didn't he used to do Aquaman?
I am not certain.
Maybe
he certainly has a style.
Yeah, maybe
which
that's
I don't
it.
Begrudge him for. I mean, you can definitely tell, and there's a certain look to the different characters, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
I'm more thumbs up, leaning towards a neutral, so I'm kind of like on the other side of that. In general, I like the story. I like what they're doing. Wasn't the greatest thing that I've read, however, it was a good, solid story. I liked it. The art moved the story along.
I'd pretty much agree with all of that. Just stylistically, the art didn't click for me as much as I would have liked it to. But overall, there's nothing wrong with this. It was a good issue. I guess maybe I just hoped for a bit more since they were kind of digging into the Black Mercy and giving its background.
Yeah, and I'm looking to where that's going to go, but next issue. There's going to be more.
Yeah. Okay, next up, our Marvel pick for the week is Captain Britain and MI-13 number 1. This is a Secret Invasion crossover, which actually kind of surprised me a little. I don't think I realized when they solicited it that it was going to be a Secret Invasion crossover. But I gotta say, I really liked the way they handled that, and the Skrull invasion going on really was a key part of this issue as a solid background element. And overall, this was a very fun issue, and I liked how we saw a couple of characters from the UK over in Marvel that we haven't seen for a while, like the Black Knight. I'm a big fan of the Dane Whitman version, because he was a key Avenger when I was reading it. It's good to see Pete Wisdom kind of getting pulled back into the mainstream Marvel universe to a degree, and seeing Spitfire again was fun. So this was a lot of fun. It was a good issue, and I'm really curious kind of where they're going with this and, you know, what the resolution of this is going to be and what spills out of it, because I'm certainly hoping something does spill out of this. What did you think?
I liked it. I was not as adept on picking up on some of the things as you may have been, because I didn't really read Excalibur and that corner of the Marvel Universe, so I'm not really up on the whole. I sort of picked it up as I read along, but, you know, Pete Wisdom, who he is, why he is, that whole thing. I'm somewhat aware of Captain Britain, but not that much. I know who Spitfire is mostly from her World War II appearances in The Invaders, but I don't think this is the same Spitfire.
Actually, it might be. I think she had some kind of rejuvenation thing maybe in one of the Union Jack miniseries, but I'm not positive on that. I could be wrong.
Well, I mean, I'm vaguely aware of who these characters are. And, you know, the Skrull crossover thing was nice. I like seeing the different Super Skrulls and kind of guessing, okay, who did they blend together to make this one? It looks like this one is a combination of Marvel monsters. He's got some Morbius in him there. And
which one are you looking at there?
The one with the fangs and the bat wings on him. You know, the underarm red wings and the big red collar. It seems like he's got some Morbius in him. And then that other one looked like he had the old gold Iron Man armor, and he's got a Thor hammer.
Well, the two on that page with Spitfire look to be kind of the classic Avengers, because you've got Hulk arms, Thor's hammer, Iron Man, and what looks to be maybe Ant-Man Wasp type stuff.
Right, the antenna.
The other one there seems to be the Defenders. Hulk physique and legs, the wings on the ankles for Namor, and clearly
Silver Surfer kind of thing going on. I see a Valkyrie sword, maybe.
Yeah, and that was something that at first I hadn't really clued in on, but was kind of cool. And if you go back to where that Morbius one was earlier in the issue, and there's the one with the flaming skull or whatever, I'm thinking that's the Champions. Because that would be Angel's Wings, Ghost Rider's Ted and stuff. And wasn't he in that group?
Yes.
Who else was in the event? Hercules's armband.
Hercules. There. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're right. So this other one, what is that, like the Legion of Monsters? That, you know, looks like he's got kind of like Wolfman legs, and he's got the Morbius thing going on.
And what I love about this is that's strictly a background thing. It's not a key part of the story. It's one of those that if you notice, it's like, hey, that's kind of cool. But if you don't, you're not really losing anything. You know, you're not confused as to what's going on or how all that pans out. And actually, this was an issue where I was really wanting one of those footnotes. Because when they introduce John on the second page of the story, I really would have loved to have had a go see whatever issue, because that's one I might have actually considered hunting down to go check out, just because it seemed like a wacky idea.
Now, what's the deal with Spitfire ripping out this skull's throat with her teeth? Has she got like some vampire in her? Maybe that's why did Baron Blood get a bite off of her or something?
I'm thinking she's been turned into a vampire in one of those Union Jack miniseries, but I can't guarantee that's what happened. I'm reasonably positive, though. But that was a good couple of years ago that happened.
Now, this was good enough that I'll be back for more. I liked it. I'm pretty pleased at how the Secret Invasion is panning out. They're not doing the crossover in such a way that you absolutely have to feel like you are totally missing out on something if you don't pick up every single issue. But they're kind of weaving the events into the stories. You know, you have the Skrulls, which is fine. You know, if you read that just in isolation, okay, we got these super Skrulls attacking, and we're going to stop that. One thing that also is confusing to me is this ethereal voice, I guess, that's kind of on the panels in the kind of bold red letters. Is that something I'm supposed to know what the heck that is from reading some other Captain Britain series somewhere?
I hope not, because I couldn't place it either. I don't know if it goes back to kind of his whole origin or whatever, and they're going to do something tied into that, or what's going on. At first, because it took a while for me to realize that was kind of part of the story versus, like, subchapter headings, or you know what I mean? That was something that I didn't think was as effective as it could have been. And also in a few places, the red text with the blue drop shadow over the art didn't quite stand out as well as it could have and probably should have.
Yeah, that good point on that. I mean, I was just kind of rolling with it. I mean, I figured, okay, is it like the sword talking maybe? Or, no, it can't be the science of the sword will be drawn again. It is relatively difficult to read with that drop shadow. They would have been better just leaving it red. The shadow obscures the text more than anything.
Or give it a white outline beyond that. Something to kind of break it out. That's one that I think we're going to get cleared up in the next issue or two.
It seemed to be hitting Pete Wisdom. That's who it is at first. But then it's also going and doing it near Captain Britain. So is it? I don't know. I just figured in the fullness of time, we'll kind of figure out what that's all about.
Yeah. Well, and I thought it was mainly Pete Wisdom. I didn't pick up on when it was kind of talking to Captain Britain. Although there it is at the end, yeah.
Although, realistically, it could be talking to Pete Wisdom and they're just showing Captain Britain flying along. But who knows?
Yeah. Well, and also, kind of near the end there, one of the other Super Skrulls is clearly a Squadron Supreme one, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, I noticed that. That was kind of cool. I like how they're keeping the super teams together in there.
That'd
be an interesting handbook to get, you know.
I was thinking the same thing. Yeah. It just, what do they call these guys and who all did they do? Because, you know, there's got to be one or two that just have to completely suck. I mean, do they have a power pack version or something? Overall, this one had a thumbs up from me. I really liked it. I'm looking forward to the next two issues because it's a 3-issue series, right?
I thought it was ongoing.
Was it? Maybe it is. I hope so. It certainly seems like it could justify that. Let me pull out my...
Issue 4 is solicited in this month's solicits. I saw them online. So if we go to the Marvel solicits off of the thread on our forum and do a search for Captain Britain. MI 13 number 4, it doesn't say anything about it being a limited series.
But I'm looking at page 49 of the Marvel previews for May, and it has Secret Invasion tie-in part 3 of 4, but that may be just...
I think it's just the story, right, because on the solicit for number 4 online, it says, it's the final battle for Britain as MI-13 makes its last stand against the Skrulls, blah, blah, blah. There's more, but it's not saying, you know, number 4 of 4. It's not saying last issue or anything like that, so I'm just assuming that's the end of the first arc in an ongoing series.
Cool. Well, I hope so, because I'm loving this. I think they're doing a great job, and I'd like to see it keep going as an ongoing.
So no indication on the solicit anyway that there's any limitation to it.
Cool. Well, and hopefully Leonard Kirk will stay on as the artist. I think he's a solid guy who doesn't get enough credit. And Paul Cornell, the writer, is doing a really good job here. I like how there's stuff in the background to kind of pull out and say, ooh, that's cool. And the main story is solid.
Yeah, good issue. So our final book today is Northwind number 5 from Boom Studios. Number 5 of 5. So you read the entire series this week, and I've been reading it as it went along.
Yes, that is true. And I was just flipping through the first two or three issues to check something real quick. I'm going to split this in kind of two parts. Actually, you know, there's the final three issues, which all kind of follow one part of the story, yet the first two kind of, I don't want to say stand alone, but there's the whole origin kind of a thing, if you will, in the first issue. They bounce forward 10 years, 15 years, or whatever in time for the second issue, and that has kind of almost a furthering of the origin. And then the next three kind of tell the, I don't want to say the main story or whatever, but the rest of the story with a little thing at the end, kind of a tag. And I really enjoyed the first issue. I thought the second issue was great. But then by the time it hit the third issue, going on through the fifth, it just felt a bit cliche. You know, there's the couple that was separated, the guy's got to go rescue the girl, and it wasn't as unique and interesting as I felt the first two issues were. It certainly was good, but I think that Boom needs, because I felt this way on one or two of their other things, they really need to work on how their stories kind of end.
Right. I had the same feeling about Exile, and a good way that you summarized it. I think what happened in 3, 4, and 5 is you kind of fell into a sort of a Mad Max post-apocalyptic kind of story. And the way they wrapped up issue number 5, I mean, it's just putting a final ending to it and tying a bow on it. And, you know, that's that. You know, you're not coming back to this storyline again. And I think it would have been a little better if it would have been left a little more open-ended and not, it almost seems like, okay, we're doing a 2-hour sci-fi movie here. And in that event, they kind of drew out the origin a little much, given that it was about 40% of the 5-issue series. And then we get kind of standard sci-fi storyline here at the end. And then the final wrap-up left me with kind of the feeling of what you get in the, you know, very final couple of minutes of the sci-fi movie of, you know, wrapping up what happened then.
I think that the bulk of the story really should have taken place between two of the pages near the end of issue 2, where we see the boy going from being trained as a young boy to, you know, a young man. And I'd really hope that we would get kind of more of that era of the character than the kind of the tail end, you know, the where they jump forward to and stuff. The pacing just seemed a little off, like you were saying.
Well, that was more interesting because that was something that we hadn't seen before. You know, it's, again, I got a very strong Mad Max vibe off. I mean, certainly, you know, not directly. You know, Mad Max is, you know, Australian outback and deserty, and this is ice and snow and the glaciers have hit Los Angeles and all this kind of business. But, you know, it's all the same. You know, we need the oil and people are all upset because they need the energy and the heat and all this kind of business. And it just seemed thematically, while the specific elements were interesting, you know, with the bison, the white bison and the crossbows and things like this, I liked that. And I liked the Ice Age hitting North America kind of element. But that was obscured in the story by the fact that they spent so much time in the Los Angeles city with the, you know, scrabbling over, you know, the standard, you know, bad guy dictator who's running the city, who, you know, has his evil ways that we have to stop and all this kind of stuff. It got a little formulaic.
Yeah, I think they should have ditched the dictator guy entirely. That was just, like you said, cliche. And I would have rather they follow the lead character as he's exploring other parts of North America and just see how different people are kind of adapting to this Ice Age and stuff. The setting was great. The character aspects for the lead I thought were really good. It's just they fell back. They had a cool setting, a cool premise. And like you said, they fell back to a formulaic plot. And that was very disappointing for me. Although still, overall, I would recommend reading this. I'm glad I read it. I enjoyed it. But you got to realize that last, you know, essentially those last three issues you've seen before in the high concept or the core story, at least. Not this rendition of it, and it's a decent rendition, but you could almost slip on the Sci-Fi Channel at any random hour and catch a movie and watch something akin to this.
Well, the way I would put it is, you know, you like Mad Max, for instance. If you like Mad Max movies, hey, you go see the new Mad Max movie, and it's in, you know, you're going to get a certain formula of it, and you'll enjoy it because it's not the same movie. It's another movie in that kind of setting. And that's the same thing with this. If you like those Mad Max movies, if you like that post-apocalyptic kind of thing with the city that's degenerated and you got the gangs and the, you know, the bad guy who runs it. I mean, that's a fine genre to have. And this is another twist on that, and you'll see a story, and it was a perfectly entertaining story like that. I just saw it that they could have gone in a different direction, as you said, with going off into more exploring of the world. But then you're not looking at just a five-issue series, you know, or you're looking at the five-issue series as the start of something. And I'm thinking more of the Boom Studios. They get maybe some of these guys who are in Hollywood or something, and they want to bring a property into comics that has a definite beginning, middle, and end and doesn't have the open-ended thing to it. And they're trying a little bit too hard to tie it up in a bow at the end of the fifth issue. I felt the same way about Exile. You know, I really liked the beginning of Exile, and then the end was just, you know, okay, this was the ending I would see on a movie on the Sci-Fi Channel. They kind of wrapped it all up in a neat little bow at the end, and that was it.
Well, and I get the wanting the beginning, middle, and end, the sense of closure and stuff for a miniseries. I'm all for that. This just seemed so final that a subsequent miniseries seems completely out of the picture. And it's funny because I was reading the stuff from Mark Waid on the text page of each issue as I was going through these. And at one point, he flat out says that Boom isn't in the market to simply produce movies in the shape of comic books. Yet, I mean, maybe this one was further in production and he didn't really have a chance to help guide it or whatever, but I felt this, to a large degree, was a movie in the shape of a comic book. And I, particularly from those first two issues, was expecting a lot more of a coming-of-age story for the lead character than going from Luke meeting Obi-Wan Kenobi, discovering what Jedis are, to suddenly fighting off and defeating the entire Empire kind of story. You know, we just seem to jump over a lot that could have been very interesting.
Yeah, well, I think that, for instance, Foundation that they had come out is much more of a much less of a movie in the shape of a comic book. And the same thing with Potter's Field that Waid himself wrote. That was a self-contained story, but it wasn't so obviously, boom, here's a Sci-Fi Channel movie. And that's what I kind of thought about Northwind at the end. It's like, great graphic novel, great Sci-Fi Channel movie.
Yeah, yeah. Again, though, it's worth checking out. I'm glad I read it. I was just disappointed by the sense of finality to it, because this is a world that I would have liked to have seen explored further with some of these characters.
Now, that being said, I do like the artist, Alex Cal. He did a nice job on the art.
Yeah, the art was really good. I mean, overall, this is a well-put-together series, well-told. The pacing of the overall story was my issue.
Right, and that's in the writing. I'm just trying to step back and say, as far as the art goes, very clearly delineated. The action flowed very nicely from panel to panel. It was clear storytelling. I wasn't confused about what was going on. You know, sometimes you get these books and it's kind of dark or muddied or too jarring of scene transitions or something. Here, the story flowed very nicely. He did a really good job on the faces. Very distinct faces. You didn't have a blending of, you know, who is that? These people all sort of look generic. Nice character to the faces, very well-drawn faces as well. I liked the way the artist did his work on this series in general, and I'd look forward to seeing more work by this guy.
Yeah, I would agree with that entirely. The guy did a very good job. The only place where the story got a little kind of muddled and confused for me was really in the last 4 or 5 pages. But part of that was the cross-cutting between a few places and what the artist had to work with.
Pacing of how it was written. You know, it's like,
exactly.
I've got to finish this thing in the last 4 pages.
Yeah, 4 pages, crammed a bunch in, and he did a good job doing that. It was just the writer put too much on those pages. So definitely thumbs up for me. Definitely recommend it, with the caveat of a little formulaic.
That's all I've got.
Cool. All right. That wraps it up.
Join us next week when we discuss DC Special Cyborg number 1 from DC, Fantastic Four number 557 from Marvel, and Madame Mirage number 6 from Top Cow Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.